This Week in America with Rick Bratton. Issues that matter to you. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Submarine attacks are among the most feared forms of maritime warfare. During World War II, the U.S. Navy and other Allied powers faced off against German U-boats and Japanese forces set on restricted submarine warfare. Smithsonian Channel's popular series, Hell Below, details both the successes and tragedies of these underwater conflicts in World War II and during the Cold War. The series also profiles the strategic and military masterminds behind these submarine campaigns and the rapidly evolving technology used in stalking and battle. One of the experts featured in Hell Below is James M. Scott, an award-winning writer and former investigative journalist, best-selling author, and military journalist. He's our guest next on This Week in America.
Want to fly somewhere? Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Then call. That's right. Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. Low-cost airlines has all kinds of cheap travel deals. Fly domestically and save up to 75%. You can even fly internationally and save even more. Yes, fly anywhere in the world and save a lot of money on your plane tickets. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. So don't book your tickets until you call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. Call right now for prices so low they can't be published. Travel experts are here 24/7 to help.
Call 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS? Newsflash, the president has changed the tax laws, and now you may be able to pay the IRS less. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, the tax doctor can help you pay the IRS as little as possible allowed by law. There are new tax laws for business owners, the self-employed, even W-2 workers. If you have a back tax problem or a few years of unfilled returns, new help to save you money is now here. Call right now to see how the new tax laws can help you. Plus, right now, we'll waive the consultation fee and give you a free tax savings report. Attention business owners, the self-employed, and W-2 workers. Make this free call to the tax doctor now and learn how to take advantage of the new tax laws that may help you pay the IRS less.
800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. That's 800-659-5731.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, online, thisweekinamerica.us. It's season two of Smithsonian Channel's documentary series, Hell Below, a look at the nation's most dramatic submarine operations from World War II and the Cold War, and the military masterminds behind some of the most momentous submarine victories in our country's history. One of the featured experts on Hell Below, James M. Scott, an award-winning writer and former reporter and investigative journalist. He's reported from Afghanistan, Iraq, tsunami-devastated Indonesia, a recipient of the McClatchy Company President's Award, named 2003 Journalist of the Year by South Carolina Press Association, honored by Wofford College as its 2005 Young Alumnus of the Year, a Nieman Fellow for Journalism at Harvard University. James is the author of The Attack on Liberty, winner of the prestigious 2010 Rear Admiral Samuel Elliott Morrison Award for Excellence in Naval Literature, author of the critically acclaimed The War Below, based on more than 100 interviews with submarine veterans. His most recent book, Target Tokyo, was a 2016 Pulitzer Prize finalist, and his fourth book, soon to be released October 2nd, the much-anticipated Rampage. And now featured expert on Smithsonian Channel's docuseries Hell Below, James M. Scott with us on This Week in America. James, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Rick, thanks so much for having me on. The pleasure is all mine.
Well, we are really looking forward to Season 2. As we learned in Season 1, some of the most dramatic and pivotal missions of World War II happened beneath the waves. On Hell Below, we actually get to see these missions come to life, don't we?
We do, and I think that's one of the strong points of the series is that, you know, for... It really takes something that's, you know, that's from the history books and it brings it alive. And it lets viewers today, you know, who weren't alive during that period, to be able to look back and wow, you know, this is, you know, it's visually stunning. It's dramatic. It's terrifying in moments. And it really, I think, helps illuminate what those men and women of the Greatest Generation, you know, in this case, the men, what they went through and taking the fight all the way to the enemy shores. So it's just a great piece of filmmaking.
We get to see the skilled crews, and we can actually feel the tension. We can feel the anxiety. I feel the claustrophobia. These were really tight quarters, weren't they? It's when you look at that, it's like, I don't know how they can focus on anything about except how can I get out of here if I have to?
Oh, yeah, you know, and it was super tight. I mean, these boats were about the length of a football field, but yet only about 27 feet wide, and you had about 80 men on them. And, you know, these guys had to sleep in bunks just 18 inches apart. Some of them slept on bunks strung between torpedoes. You know, when you're in the middle of an attack or you're in silent running and the AC system's shut down, I mean, you're covered in sweat. It's just the air, the humidity in the air and the... And then the oxygen levels would decrease to the point you couldn't light a match. I mean, it really was just this austere environment. And I think, you know, and I think the show does a wonderful job of showing that. You know, when you're watching these men sort of race through these tight quarters as they're reloading torpedoes, and it really, I think, transports viewers there.
Well, it really does. Yeah, I'm out of breath when the hour is over with and going through the struggle with the skippers and the crews. Let's talk about these people. I mentioned the book where you actually talked to over 100 veterans who served on submarines. To say these people had nerves of steel, they were a special breed, that's even an understatement, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And I think for today's audiences, it's really... You know, we live this great lifestyle today, and you think, what would it have been like to have been a sailor on one of these boats and to say, all right, I'm going to go out to sea for 3 months, and I might not see daylight that entire time period. I might not take a shower that time, entire period of time, you know? And this is, you know, there was no Facebook and Twitter. There's no Amazon Prime or Netflix to entertain you. I mean, during your off time, you're lucky to have a book or maybe a record player, play some AC/DCs. I mean, it really, you know, these long periods of boredom intermixed with moments of absolute terror, you know, as you're undergoing attacks and depth charges. So it really took a unique personality to be able to do that. And, you know, one thing too, that's why the Navy made the submarine service. It was all volunteer. You know, you had to raise your hand and sign up for this. You didn't get appointed and sent. You had to volunteer.
As you're watching, you're thinking, this is worse than the battlefield. I mean, you mentioned the tight spaces. You can't see if you're under attack. Chances are, if you are attacked and in trouble, nobody's going to rescue you. You were really out there by yourself mostly, weren't you?
You really were, and it was incredibly dangerous. You have to remember, literally, one out of every five of our submarines didn't come back. And we don't today even know what happened to all of them. And then typically, when a boat was lost, it was all hands that were lost with it. And, you know, when you're undergoing a depth charge attack, you have to just sit there and take it, you know, and these men would just, and they would go to, you know, they would tell these guys, you know, when you go into silent running, if you're not working right now, you need to climb into your bunk. And you would just have to lay there and have that fear and listen and wait. And when these depth charges would go off, you know, it would shatter gauges. I mean, it would, on the drum, they actually sprung a leak in their conning towers. I mean, it really was just and you couldn't see where it was coming from. You just had to sit there and take it. So, yeah, it really is. It had to be absolutely terrifying.
Season 2, Hell Below, Smithsonian Channel, premiering Sunday, July 1st, 9 Eastern Pacific. One of the featured experts, award-winning writer James M. Scott, with us. Right away in the beginning of the season, what we're looking at in Enemy Waters is the episode. This is the remarkable history of the USS Silversides and the key role it played in the Guadalcanal campaign. Talk about that, because this is one of the legendary submarines many of us have heard about from World War II.
Absolutely. And, you know, for folks who live in the Michigan area or are going to be up that way, it's actually a museum ship today. You can actually go and visit the Silversides in Muskegon, Michigan. But no, it was one of the top performing subs of World War II. And at the beginning of the war, it was sent all the way to the enemy's home waters, and it was engaged in one of the first deck gun battles of World War II. And that is, they actually decided, rather than torpedo the small Japanese boat, that they would actually take it on in a surface battle. And ended up in this raging gunfight, which is something you don't think about submarines doing, but in this case, they did. You know, torpedoes were very expensive at that time period, and so you only had 24 of them, so you didn't want to waste it on a small ship. Small boat, and so the skipper, Creed Burlingame, made the decision that they would actually fight this one out on the surface.
And you see,
it became a hellacious gun battle.
Well, and something you don't really think about, what if somebody becomes desperately ill, and we have that happen during this episode?
We do, actually. And that's the thing people need to remember is submarines didn't have doctors. You know, they had pharmacist mates, which was the equivalent of a paramedic, if you will, a Navy foreman. In this case, on the Silver Sides in enemy waters, one of the sailors came down with a case of appendicitis. And you couldn't turn back just because of one sailor. So the skipper has to convince the pharmacist mate that he can pull off this major operation. and it was like an episode of the TV show MacGyver, you know, where they had to use all their creativity. In this case, they actually had to take spoons and bend them at right angles to make retractors. Since they don't have an emergency room, they turned the wardroom table, the officer's dining quarters, if you will, into the operating room. And so then they went down to 150 feet in enemy waters and then had to perform this surgery. So it really is just again, it kind of gets at that resourcefulness and that grit that these sailors really had to have to be a part of the submarine service.
Hell Below, Smithsonian Channel, Sundays 9 Eastern Pacific. James M. Scott with us on the program. Another legendary submarine, the USS Barb. The commander there envisioned, demonstrated new ways to fight from a sub. This is going to be an interesting episode. Once again, innovation that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it really was. I mean, Gene Flucky was a pretty legendary submarine skipper. In fact, you know, one of his famous things that he did is he disembarked some of his sailors to actually go and blow up a Japanese rail line. And, so, I mean, they really took the submarine fight, you know, even out of the water, if you will. So they did. And he was one of a number of American skippers that really helped pioneer our submarine service during World War II and to help realize, because up until World War II, our submarines weren't these independent fighters. You know, they were usually used for, you know, guarding the Panama Canal and things like that, and part of larger fleet action. But during World War II, we made the decision that we're going to take these submarines, we're going to turn them into stealth offensive raiders. We can send them all the way across the Pacific to the enemy's backyard, to the enemy's harbors, and they can sink ships. So they had to pioneer these new tactics. And so you had guys like Mush Morton and Dick O'Kane who really had to sort of test the limits of what their submarines and their crews could endure in order to most effectively take that fight to the enemy. And so that's one of the things that I think the TV show does a really terrific job of exploring is and putting in context these types of individuals, these skippers, and sort of their lasting role in submarine warfare.
And it's interesting, and we see this unfold in the series Hell Below on Smithsonian Sunday nights at 9 o'clock, the expanding role of submarines. You don't just say, what was the role of the submarine? What were the roles of the submarines? They really did a number of functions, didn't they?
They really did. And I'll tell you, you know, during World War II, you know, they did at times operate as part of larger fleet operations. You know, we used them in advance of the return to the Philippines and Battle of Leyte Gulf. We used them, albeit not all that effectively, at Midway. But really one of their great strengths, however, was their ability to strangle the Japanese. I mean, Japan was an island nation, is an island nation. It was materially bankrupt and depended on merchant ships to bring in everything from fuel that it used to power its fighters and its battleships to the rice it needed to help feed its people. And so it was uniquely vulnerable to a blockade by American submarines. And so our submarines, week after week, month after month, year after year, sunk all those ships and cut off those supplies that by the end of the war, the Japanese population was literally suffering from malnourishment. You know, they had to park their battleships in port because they didn't have the fuel to operate them. Their streets were empty of vehicle traffic because they didn't have the gasoline. So really, that role that American submarines played during World War II is one that, you know, not enough people know about, but one that was so incredibly important. You know, people think of Midway, they think of Guadalcanal, but they don't tend to think, hey, what about the submarines? And the role that the submarines played was absolutely pivotal in bringing it into World War II.
And you take us up into the Cold War, the final episode, the Cuban Missile Crisis, and something that I can remember as a child being scared to death watching the news unfold of the Cuban Missile Crisis, the possibility we thought we didn't know how close we were to a potential nuclear disaster just 90 miles off the coast of the U.S.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and again, that's one of the great things about the show is it really has taken submarine warfare and sort of shown it as it's evolved, you know, from, you know, early talk about what happened, you know, the World War One to World War Two and now World War Two into the Cold War, because the technology has changed so dramatically. And it's gone and from World War Two into the Cold War, it goes from, you know, this this very combatant type of warfare, which you're just destroying ships, to one of espionage and one of these high stakes, these gamble and whatnot. So really, I think the show, it's got something in there for everybody. I think for the historians, for those enthusiasts who want to watch and learn about this and be entertained with these types of stories, to also those who are World War II buffs, to those who want to learn more about the Cold War. So I think Hell Below has done a wonderful job of sort of showing that evolution.
Where has the
submarine warfare?
Well, it does. And I got a couple minutes left in the program. I'd like to ask where the technology is going. If you were to take one of the submarine veterans that you talked to for the book, The War Below, put them into a submarine in 2018, what would their reaction be? Yeah, that's what I thought.
The boats have certainly gotten bigger. And they've changed, their propulsion systems. They're no longer diesel and battery power. They're nuclear power. But one of the things that people always do say is, even though you may have made them bigger, the Navy just packs more stuff in them anyway. So they're still pretty cramped and tight. So, probably not quite as bad as they were during World War II, but it's still a tight quarters, no doubt about it.
And I'm thinking probably appendectomies are no longer done with a spoon on a submarine. Probably a little more sophisticated. Probably a little more sophisticated.
Yeah, exactly.
I mentioned coming up the book Rampage, and I've been reading some of the early reviews, and this is another home run. I can't wait for October 2nd for Rampage. In about 30 seconds, tell us what we're going to find out in your new book.
Rampage is the incredible story of the Battle of Manila, which is like the submarine warfare. It's a story too few people know. It's the, Manila was an American colony. Douglas MacArthur had to leave the Philippines at the beginning of the war. He famously vowed to return. And this is what happens when he comes back. And the battle to retake Manila was the bloodiest urban fight in the Pacific War. It was like Fallujah in Iraq. The Japanese booby-trapped dead bodies, churches, they fortified buildings. And it became a street-by-street, building-by-building slog for Americans. And in the end, the Japanese ultimately killed about 100,000 Filipino civilians and committed some of the worst atrocities of World War II, very comparable to the rape of Nanking. So the book is based on about 4 years of work, interviews with survivors, the U.S., the Philippines, a review of literally tens of thousands of pages of atrocity reports, war crimes testimony, and things like that to bring you this new book, Rampage, which will be October 2nd. Bookstores.
October 2nd, Rampage, from award-winning writer James M. Scott, one of the featured experts, Season 2, Hell Below, Smithsonian Channel. James, a pleasure having you on the program. Looking forward to Season 2 and looking forward to Rampage on October 2nd. Thank you for being with us.
Rick, thank you so much for having me on. Take care.
You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.
Want to fly somewhere? Looking for cheap flights or cheap tickets? Then call. That's right. Call the low-cost airline travel hotline now for prices so low, we can't publish them anywhere. Low-cost airlines has all kinds of cheap travel deals. Fly domestically and save up to 75%. You can even fly internationally and save even more. Yes, fly anywhere in the world and save a lot of money on your plane tickets. We'll even save you money with cheap travel deals on hotels, rental cars, even complete travel packages. So don't book your tickets until you call us first for the absolute cheapest prices on U.S. and international airline tickets and hotels. Call right now for prices so low they can't be published. Travel experts are here 24/7 to help.
Call 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306, 800-298-0306.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS? Newsflash, the president has changed the tax laws. And now, you may be able to pay the IRS less. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, the tax doctor can help you pay the IRS as little as possible allowed by law. There are new tax laws for business owners, the self-employed, even W-2 workers. If you have a back tax problem or a few years of unfilled returns, new help to save you money is now here. Call right now to see how the new tax tax laws can help you. Plus, right now, we'll waive the consultation fee and give you a free tax savings report. Attention business owners, the self-employed, and W-2 workers. Make this free call to the tax doctor now and learn how to take advantage of the new tax laws that may help you pay the IRS less.
800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. 800-659-5731. That's 800-659-5731.
This is an urgent health notice for all residents suffering from back, neck, knee, and wrist pain. You may qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you, but the deadline is fast approaching. Simply call the Health Alert Hotline now.
You heard right. You may qualify for a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace. These items may even be covered by Medicare or your private insurance. The Health Alert Hotline is your brace company. These specialized braces have been tested for pain relief. Call us toll-free right now to determine your eligibility and to learn how to use your private insurance or Medicare to minimize your out-of-pocket cost. Don't wait. If the deadline passes, you may lose your opportunity to get a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace at little or no cost to you.
800-430-9605. 800-430-9605. 800-430-9605. That's 800-430-9605.
Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, online, thisweekinamerica.us. Digital Spy says Dietland is timely, darkly entertaining, and will leave you craving more. The highly anticipated darkly comedic series premieres with back-to-back episodes Monday, June 4th, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific on AMC. Based on the 2015 best-selling, critically acclaimed novel of the same name, Dietland explores one woman's journey to self-awakening while exploring a multitude of issues faced by women today. Among the stars, Tamara Tooney, award-winning actress, star of television, stage, screen, producer, director, philanthropist, numerous TV credits, including series regulars, Better Call Saul, The Blue Bloods, Billions, 24, and of course, Dr. Melinda Warner in the hit series Law and Order SVU, about to become TV's longest-running series. Many memorable movie roles, Flight, The Devil's Advocate, City Hall, The Caveman's Valentine, among them, a storied career in theater, acting, and producing, including an Obie for a starring role in Familiar, starring as Maggie in the first all-African-American production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, sharing the stage with the legendary Lena Horne in Lena Horne, The Lady and Her Music, and a recent project producing and developing the musical Frog Kiss, the musical. And now, in AMC's revenge fantasy series, Dietland, Tamara Tooney with us on This Week in America. Tamara, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick. I'm exhausted by what you've just read.
Well, imagine you actually did it. So if you took a little sabbatical here for a couple of years, that would be highly understandable. You know, everybody looking forward to the show. Digitland had another great line, too. They said it's like the Devil Wears Prada with vigilantes. I like that. You know, you said this is so different and relevant. Let's start with the different. There really isn't anything like this on television, is there?
No, there isn't. There is absolutely nothing like this on television, which is one of the things that I was attracted to. This show is so interesting. I mean, it's, as you say, a self-awakening, revenge fantasy, darkly comic thriller. There's so much going on in this show, and that's why I think it's going to be, you know, really, really what everybody's talking about.
All of the critics seem to agree the strength is the cast. Let's talk about your character, Julia Smith. You describe her as a little bit left of center. Talk about her.
She is. She's a bit wacky. You know, when we first meet her, you know, one minute she's somewhat mercurial. One minute she's, you know, very intense and straightforward, and then the next second she's kind of wacky and loopy. But it's interesting because it's a bit of a facade for Julia. You know, she works in this beauty closet for this media conglomerate, but she's actually there. She has her own personal agenda for being there. And, you know, part of her agenda is to, you know, reprogram the way women think about themselves. So she's constantly in Plum's ear, you know, trying to get her to realize that, you know, beauty is in fact only skin deep, and you have to love yourself.
Yes.
And accept yourself. So, and that's only part of it, because then we find out some other things about Julia that I just can't reveal right now.
You'll have to watch to see,
and it will be
and it will be a pleasure to watch the show as this unfolds. You mentioned Plum. Plum Kettle, Joy Nash, plays this role perfectly. Talk about Plum, because she's the one that's really struggling with these issues, and she really wants to be sort of invisible because she's overweight and it bothers her.
That's correct. That's correct. And not only does it bother her, but also she is, you know, constantly being mistreated by the world because of her size. You know, so she has actually, you know, detached herself a bit from the world. So she's living, she's not living actually. She's kind of just existing until she gets, you know, loses weight and becomes this perfect size, and then she thinks her life will be better. And, of course, you know, that's never the case. And it's about finding your own happiness and your own way of accepting yourself for who you are. You know, and, of course, the show is not promoting being overweight. But what it is promoting is being healthy and having a healthy attitude. And it's doing it in such a fun and interesting and unexpected way.
Well, talk about that, the challenge of that as an actress. You've got the dark laughs, and then a few minutes later, you're talking about a serious subject. In fact, you said the show is sometimes funny, sometimes scary. Talk about as an actress when you get a role like that.
Oh, well, you know, at the end of the day, it's about being in the moment, you know, and when I approach even comedy, I approach it seriously. I mean, because that's what's funny. I mean, life is funny. Things happen all the time, you know, that are unexpectedly funny. So I think that's my approach, at least, to just being as honest in the moment as I can be. And if it happens to be funny, then, you know, then it's funny. And if it's scary and serious, then it's scary and serious.
We talked about different and relevant. We talked about the different part. Relevant, talk about that, because you really deal with issues. It's like you rip the show from the headlines.
Absolutely. You know, as we said, it deals with self-image. It deals with self-acceptance. You know, it deals with pushing back against the objectification of women, the sexual objectification of women. You know, it deals with everything that is happening in today's headlines, particularly on the women's front. It's an empowering show, you know, but again, it's entertainment. And so there's a level of, you know, what if women were to push back in this way? And that's where we have this vigilante group that we're not sure who they are, or what they are, or why they're doing what they're doing, you know. So it's really compelling.
A minute or so left. Talk about that vigilante group. Talk about Jennifer, because this is a group that's decided we're going to take things into our own hands. So you've got this element to deal with as well.
Exactly. And it's interesting in the show, because there's that group, Jennifer, and then there's this this place called Calliope House that's run by a woman who's a little more, you know, let's talk about it. You know, she does her own kind of psychobabble therapeutical thing, and she's not perfect or right either. So you have these two different entities that have entered Plum's life, the kind of benign Calliope House and then the kind of violent vigilante group, Jennifer. And, you know, we don't know why Jennifer is doing what they're doing. We know that they're attacking men who have raped or murdered or sexually abused. But there's much more to it than that we find out much later in the show as to why they're doing what they're doing.
What's interesting is this is really entertaining. You're sitting there, you're watching it, you're entertained. Yet it's one of those you really can't get all of the topics you talk about in Dietland out of your mind. Is that one of the benefits of doing something like this? I entertain, and they're going to think about some of these important issues after the show is over.
Absolutely, and I think that's the best form of entertainment myself. I think it's brilliant. Dietland is brilliant in the way that it, you know, through humor and through irony, sometimes it gets the message across, and that's one of the genius. That's part of the genius of the show. It's able to do that.
Tomorrow, tune in with us on This Week in America, one of the stars of Dietland, 9 Eastern Pacific on AMC. You're listening to This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us.
You've been listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. And join us next time for another broadcast of This Week in America.